Today's shir is Masechta Nedarim Daf Mem Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, the first words Ha'im L'Chaveroi. We learned in the shir yesterday, in the previous shir, that if somebody made a nether that I will not enter Beischa, your home, then as long as the person owns the home, I may not enter it. If the person sells the home, the person passes away, I may enter the home. On the other hand, if the nether was said by Zeh, I connected the nether to the home. So it makes no difference if the ownership of the home is transferred. I may not enter the home. As we also said in the previous year, Beischa, if I said your home, is not always going to be a more lenient situation. Because let's say you sold your home and let's say you demolished the home and rebuilt it, then the home is still Beischa, I would not be allowed to enter it. On the other hand, if I said by Zeh, this home, this house, and then the house for some reason is no longer here and it's rebuilt, I would be allowed to go into it. There's an interesting shaila in the Yerushalmi. Why will be the halacha, asked the Yerushalmi, if I said a combination? I said Beischa and I said Zeh. So do I have the worst of all worlds? It's basically, it's your home. So even if the home is demolished and it's rebuilt, I can't walk in. And I have, on the other hand, Zeh, it makes no difference if the owner is no longer the same owner, I can't walk in. The Rishalmi wants to say that the question is really based on the Shaila of Tfayis Lashon Rishon or Tfayis Lashon Achron, which is the more primary wording, the first word or the second word. Most Rishonim, Lahalocha Machmer, and say that if I use the terminology, Beischa Zeh, I'll never be able to walk into that house under almost any circumstance. Another shaila that I saw that the Rivash discusses is if I said Beischa, your home, so it's only as long as your home. Let's say you sell the home, so then I can walk in. It's not Beischa anymore. Let's say you buy back the house. You had the house, you sold the house, and then you buy it back. Is the nether, so to speak, reactivated? The Rivash brings down two shitas. One shita, the Rivash says, once it lost its original ownership, it's no longer Beischa. And even if that owner rebuys it, it wouldn't make a difference. Another opinion that the Rivash himself holds is if he buys it back, the nether would be reactivated. And he even wants to say, an interesting chiddush, that let's say somebody said Beischa, your home, and you sell that home. But you take the proceeds of that sale and you buy another home. That too may be considered Beischa, because that second home emanates from the first home. How were you able to buy the second house? Because you sold the first house. So it's really an extension of the first house, and therefore he suggests that I may not be able to walk in passively into that second home. So now Baya Avimi asked the following shaila. Somebody says that I won't walk into this house. And then the person mace dies or shemachal achar, and he sells it to someone else. Mahu. What is the halacha? And the question, says the Gemara, boils down to the following question. Adam I say that you may now walk into this house. So certainly as long as I own the house, the nether is a very valid nether. The Gemara's question, however, here is, can I make a nether that will remain effective after I don't own the house? I sold the house. Is the nether still effective or not? So the Rishonim and the Achronim say, certainly if I were to make a nether, that will only be effective after I no longer own the house. That means I make a nether that after I sell this house, or there's a house that I don't own at all, but let's use this case, that after I no longer own the house, you should not be allowed to walk into the house, that nether will not be an effective nether. The question here is that now when I'm making the nether, it is a good nether. I do own the house. I do have the ability to prohibit you from entering the house. And the Gemara's question is, could that nether remain in effect even when I no longer own the house? I saw the Mefarshim take the question, interesting, they don't answer the shaila. Why would be the halacha as follows? I make the nether today, that the nether should be effective in 30 days. Today I own the house, and I say that the nether should be effective in 30 days. And by the time the 30 days come around, I no longer own the house. Is that considered like a situation that the Gemara is discussing? Because when I made the nether, it's potentially effective because today I own the house. Or since when I want the nether to be effective, I no longer own the house, perhaps the nether is certainly not effective. But again, Al Gemara's question is a simpler situation. I do own the house today. I do make the nether to be effective today. And the question is, can this nether remain effective even after I no longer own the house? So the Karban Asano asks, we already had this Gemara. We learned the Gemara that if somebody makes a nether before Shemitah, that you're not allowed to eat my peiros, that even though Shemitah then comes and the fruits of Shemitah I don't own, the Gemara says the nether, according to Rabbanan, actually according to everyone, we explain Rav and Shmuel, the nether remains effective. Because when I made the nether, it was a good nether. So why is the Gemara opening up the discussion again? Says the Karban Asano, a beautiful teretz, we can't bring a raya from Shemitah to other areas of Halacha. Because Shemitah, my not owning the field in the Shemitah year, is different than when I sell a house. If I have a house, today I own the house, I sell the house, it's not mine. In the Shemitah year, when I no longer have the absolute control in the field, first of all, I don't have control, but it's not like I sold it to anyone else. No one has control. It's hefka to everyone. Moreover, when we learned the sugya of Shemitah, we explained the hefker of Shemitah is a very unique type of hefker. It's only a hefker to the degree that people should be able to go into the field to get the fruit. But it's not that the field could become someone else's. Therefore, perhaps by Shemitah, the halacha is that since the field really doesn't completely leave my control, it's only somewhat of a hefker. There the halacha is, Adam ois dovel chashietzim reshusai. But in a situation where I own a house and then I sell it to someone else, where it's completely out of my control, the Gemara's question is, can a person make that kind of nedru or not? So Gemara says, Tashma, from a Gemara in the Masechta Bava Kama, which we also learned when we learned that sugya, somebody says, somebody says to his son, Kainim shiyata nenenli, a father, Rahman Aslan, makes a nedru that his son may not benefit from him. Umes, and then the father passes away. The halacha is Yerushenu. The son could inherit his share. Why? Because the nether is only as long as the father is alive. Yerusha, he didn't make the nether for afterwards. However, if the father used the language of the chayov of b'maisai, there umes, and then the father dies, lo Yerushenu. Now, after the father dies, he doesn't own anything. Yet the father, we see from there, has the ability to prohibit something even after it's in Rishus. Shema mina, Adam ois dovash Rishusai, l'chishyetzim Rishusai, that a person has that ability, Shema mina. So the Ran and the Rosh asked that when we learned this sugya, when we learned this Gemara in Daf Mem Beis, the Gemara said that we can't bring a raya from there to our question. Because there the father used a very strong language. He used the words b'chayav b'maisai. Maybe only when somebody uses that type of strong language does he have the ability to even prohibit after it's out of his rishus. But if somebody made a regular nether, which is the case of Al Gemara, who says that a nether has that power? So the Rosh, because of this kasha, says that Avimi Shaila is indeed in such a situation. When the person in Al Gemara said that you're not allowed to enter this house, used very strong language, b'chayai, when I own it and when I sell it. So it's a similar situation. The Ran says, if we remember the Gemara on Daf Mem Beis, the Ran says that the Gemara on Daf Mem Beis says that that was only a Havamina, that the difference is because he used a strong language. L'maskon of that sugya, there's a power to make a nether that should be effective even when it's out of my rishus, makes no difference if I use strong language or not. Now here we have a very fundamental machloikis Ran and Rajba, how to understand this Gemara. The Ran says, Umeis lo Yerushenu, that if the father used the language that my son may not benefit me, from me, b'chaye or b'moisei, the Mishnah in the Sefer says lo Yerushenu, says the Ran, it doesn't mean that Hilchus Yerusha doesn't apply. You can't abrogate Hilchus Yerusha. Hilchus Yerusha, Hilchus Yerusha. So the son is the theoretical owner of this of his portion of the estate, But because there's a nether on him, that prevents him from having benefit. But it doesn't mean that he's not the Yairish. I asked the Ran if that's pshat in that Mishnah. So why does the Mishnah use the words lo Yerushana? It's inaccurate. He is the Yairish, he just can't benefit. So the Ran says the reason the Mishnah uses the words lo Yerushana, because the Mishnah wants to be consistent with the Reisha. In the Reisha it says that since the father didn't use the words b'chayiv v'maisai, that loch is the son does Yerushanu inherit him. So we want to remain consistent and use the words lo Yerushanu. But it's not really accurate. He is a Yairish, he may not benefit. The Rashba disagrees with the Ran. And the Rashba says that we have to take the Sefer literally. Lo Yerushanu, because there's a nether preventing him from inheriting, lo Yerushanu, he has no right to Yarshim. So the Ran says, if we look in the Gemara, in Masechet Baba Kama, that Kuf Ches Amud Beis, that quotes this whole Gemara, so the Ran says there, what should the son, who, because of the nether, can't directly benefit from this estate, do with it? V'yof v'yitein l'bonar v'le'echov, give his share that he actually can't use to family members. And if he doesn't have family members, he should borrow money. And the creditors should take the money they're owed out of his share of the estate. So the Ran says, firstly, this is a raya that he's correct. If he doesn't get a chelik, if he doesn't get a portion of the Yerusha, so what's pshat that he gets it and gives it to his family members? What's pshat that he is able to borrow against it? It must be he gets a share. But not a question is an obvious question. Even if we'll say, like the Ran, that Mishnah is a proof to the Ran's opinion that he is a Yairish, he is deserving of a share, there's just a problem that he can't benefit. But he can't benefit. So if he can't benefit, how could it be used to pay off his loans? How could it be used to give to his family members? Isn't that a benefit? That if there's money that's being used to pay off my loan, that's a pretty good benefit for me. So there are two terutzim that I saw. There are more terutzim, but we're going to repeat two terutzim. The Ran and the Rambam say that we're not really making a direct benefit. All he does is he says these assets are available assets that are sort of like a hefgen and nobody really owns it because the son who should have gotten it didn't receive it. And you could go, the words that the Rambam uses, mar mokum. He's showing you could take your money from there. But not that's really accruing to this son who may not benefit from the estate, and then his yarshim or his creditors take it from there. That's the Ran and the Rambam's teretz. But then I saw a very interesting teretz from the Bach. It's almost human psychology. The Bach says, in our situation, Rachman al-Tzlan, we have a father who doesn't want his son to benefit from him. What does that mean? Why would a father do that? Why would a father disinherit a son? Obviously, the father is concerned. He doesn't like the way his son acts. And he doesn't want his money to go to the son who will use it for inappropriate purposes. But it's not to say that the father, a son is a son. A father is a father. So what the father meant, says the Bach, is that I don't want the money to go to you because I don't trust and I don't like what I think you're going to do with the money. But to use it for your family members, to use it for your creditors, you're certainly my son. And I certainly want to see your benefit on that level. And that's why it says the Bach, that isn't contradictory to what the father intended with his nether, and that's why it may be used for those purposes. Tanan Hossam continues the Gemara. We're going to learn a Mishnah Mitzvah and Daf Nun Beis. If somebody says, Koinem Peres Ha'elu Alai, somebody says, these fruits should be us to me. Koinem Ha'elapi, Koinem Ha'elafi, different terminology, how he says that he doesn't want to benefit from a different specific type of fruit. So the Mishnah says, Osa B'chulufeihem U'B'gedulehem. I may not use what that fruit is exchanged for, or I may not use what emanates from the fruit, to be a little clearer. Let's say I say I'm not allowed to eat this apple, and then this apple is traded in for a pear or for a tape recorder. So that's the chilufim of something I'm not allowed to benefit from, and therefore I can't eat the pear or use the tape recorder. Giduleya means what it means. If I take that apple and I plant it in the ground and another apple tree comes out, I may not use that apple tree. That's what the Mishnah says. The Ran tells us that the halach of that Mishnah only applies in a situation where I said a specific item. These apples, these pears are also to me. But were somebody to use a more general type of neder, I'm not allowed to eat apples, I'm not allowed to eat pears, without specifying specific apples, specific pears, that's not the subject of that Mishnah, that's not the subject of our shir. The Rat also goes on to say that this Gemara we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem now is not only referring to a situation where something is usur to me because I prohibited it with another, but any situation that there's something that I'm not allowed to benefit from, that there are foods or items that are usur b'hano. An example we're going to have in Mitzvah Shem later in the shir is Orla. Orla is usur b'hano. The same din would apply. The Sefer Nidri's reason says there's a very clear cheshbin in how to understand what our Gemara in today's shir is doing. Our Gemara today is discussing the outgrowth of a nether. So the first example we learned today is I own a house, and it's this house. And clearly, while it's my house, I can make nedarim regarding the house. Now the Gemara, and then the Gemara asks, but how powerful are those nedarim? Could they even last after I no longer own the house? And the Gemara in the previous Gemara proved that we can. Now the Gemara, so the Nidri's reason says one case is built on the previous case. Now that we established that one has the ability to do that, the Gemara now is going to probe further. The Gemara is going to continue probing how far the power of a nether is. And the Gemara's question is as follows. By Rami Bachoma, I'm a Kainan Paris Elu Aplani. I say, you may not eat this fruit. Ma'al b'chalofehim. So you're not allowed to eat the fruit. The question is, what will be your status regarding exchanging the fruit? Do we say, gabo delay, hoil va odam oisa peris chaver al atzmoy, odam oisa dovish laboil oilam al atzmoy? A person on himself has much more power, because I control myself. So that's why, in a situation where I said that I won't eat fruit, the halach is that only may I not eat that fruit, I can't eat the chilufim or the gedulim of that fruit. Gabi chaveroi, hoil ben odam oisa peris chavero la chaveroi, oina odam oisa peris lebol oilam al chavero. So as the Ran and the Rosh, particularly the Rosh, explains the Gemara very beautifully. He says, in this case, we have two strikes. Number one, if I go and I say that I won't eat something, so I have a very strong level of control, because a person controls himself, or a person ought to control himself. When a person says to someone else, you may not eat something that belongs to me, there's also a strong level of control, because those fruits that I'm saying you may not eat are fruits that I hear in the world that belong to me, that I again control. The case over here that Rabbi Bacham is discussing has, so to speak, two strikes. I'm making the nether not regarding myself. I'm making the nether regarding you. And when I'm making the nether regarding you, it's on a thing that doesn't yet exist. The question isn't the fruit that I say you may not eat. Are you allowed to eat? Of course you're not allowed to eat. It's my fruit, and I have the right to prohibit you from eating them. The question of the Gemara, however, is, do we go further and say it regarding the chilufim of that fruit and the gedulim of that fruit? Because we have two strikes. What are the two strikes? Number one, the person who's subject of the nether is not me, it's someone else. So you always have less control over someone else than you have over yourself. And number two, it's regarding an item that doesn't exist. It's regarding an item that is only chilufim, that can be exchanged or will grow. And that's why the Gemara says the Rosh is, that's Rabbi Bacham's question, how far do we take? And the Ran goes on to say, there is no question that l'chatchila, one should not do it. That means, if I said you're not allowed to eat this fruit that belongs to me, you l'chatchila should not take that fruit and exchange it for another fruit and eat that other fruit. or take that fruit and plant it and eat what emanates from the ground. No shaila, it's asul chatchila. Furthermore, says the Ran, that let's say you're the subject of my nether, but it wasn't you who exchanged the fruit or planted the fruit. It was a third party that exchanged or planted the fruit. You would be allowed to eat the chalufim or the gedulim of the fruit. The Gemara's question, says the Ran, is limited to you, the subject of my nether, who may not eat this apple that belongs to me, that I prohibited to you to eat. And you shouldn't exchange that apple. You shouldn't plant that apple, but you did. And now the shaila is, what is the halacha after the fact? May you eat the chalufim of the apple, or may you not eat the chalufim of the apple? Says the Gemara, Adama, do we say, Mishum the chalufim ki gedulim, loishnahu loishnachaveri. And as the Rishonim explain the Gemara, the Rishonim say that to the Gemara it's simple, that if I said that you may not eat an apple, you certainly may not eat the gedulim of that apple. If you took that apple and planted it in the ground, you're not allowed to eat the gedulim. Why? Because the gedulim are a direct growth of what you're not allowed to eat. They're an extension. You take an apple, you plant an apple, you have another apple. So they're certainly awesome. So the Rishonim explained that to the Gemara at this point, there is no question that if I said you're not allowed to eat my apple, if you take that apple and you plant it and another apple grows, you're not allowed to eat it. And therefore, the Gemara is suggesting that if to us it's obvious that you're not allowed to eat the gedulim, the same halacha would apply to the chilufim. Amar of Acha ben Menyumi, Toshma, also a case that we spoke about many times. A man tells his wife she may not benefit from him. And the Rishonim ask, how could a husband tell his wife that she's not allowed to benefit from him? There's an obligation. Every husband has a shibud to take care of his wife and have relations with his wife. So how is this nether at all valid? So Tosfos gives two terutzim. One terutz is a very simple terutz. It's questionable if it's halachically acceptable, but it's an easy teretz. He says that if a husband goes and makes a nether to his wife that she can't have any benefit from him, the nether is not valid. He has a prior obligation. However, let's say a man goes to a woman, they're not married, and says, you're not allowed to benefit from me. And then they get married. So when the nether was made, it was an effective nether. They weren't married. They weren't husband and wife. Therefore, the nether remains in effect even after they get married. That's one way Tosfos says how this nether could be a valid nether. Another way Tosfos says, a little more complicated, teretz, is in the following way. A husband says to his wife, you will not be allowed to have relations with me if you have benefit from me. So the nether by itself, there's nothing wrong. He didn't say they're not going to have relations. He tied it to something else. But no matter what, so now this woman, this wife, can't have benefit from a husband. So how's she going to live? Says the Braisa, Loiva, she goes and borrows money, or Balachoyvim borrow in the front. And then the people who she borrowed money from collect their money from the husband. And we have to review a machloikis of Chanan and the Rabbanan that we discussed. The Mishnah says that if you're now a benefit from me, we learned a shaila, am I allowed to pay off your debts? The Mishnah said that I am allowed to pay off your debts. And when the Gemara tried to analyze, isn't that called benefit for me? Isn't that called benefit for me? Paying off your debts. Most people would like their debts to be paid off. Why is it asr? Why is it mutter? So we reviewed a machlokes Chanan Rabbanan. Chanan said in such a situation, with a wife whose husband left her without a means of support, and a person from the street goes and supports the wife. So could this man now collect what he paid, what he laid out for the wife from the husband? Chanan said, if you recall, this is Hiniach Ma'oisov al Karen Atzvi. He has no recourse to the husband. The Rabbanan disagreed. Of course he has recourse. Therefore, just to review what we learned, therefore, since we see that if I pay off something for you, I don't necessarily have recourse. So that's why if I pay off your debts, we learned, I didn't benefit you. because I don't have recourse to you, according to Chanan. This price is saying that if this woman is left, can't get supported from her husband because of this existing nether, the halacha is that the man from the street supports the wife and he collects the money from the husband. So the first question is, according to Chanan, we just said it's a case of hinich ma'isav al karnat tzvi, that if I support a woman, I don't have recourse to the husband. So why is the Braisa saying that I do? That's one question Rishonim ask. So Rishonim answer, when is the halacha, very important din, when is the halacha according to Chanan that I don't have recourse to the husband? If when I gave the money, I didn't make any clear stipulation under what circumstances or why I'm giving the money. There the halacha is that I don't have any recourse to the husband. But if when I gave the money, I was very clear I'm doing it as a loan, if I'm very clear that I'm doing it as a loan to be repaid, there even Chanan will agree that he has recourse to the husband. There is a machloikas rishonim. We quoted this machloikas when we learned the sugya. How far to take this then? The Rajba says that if the man who's supporting the wife didn't say anything, he just gave her money, we assume it was a loan, and he has a right to collect from the husband. The Ran disagreed. The man has to clearly say that he's doing it as a loan. Otherwise, he doesn't have recourse to the husband. But now the Rishonim ask a question according to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say that if I pay off your debts, it is considered that I'm benefiting you. So if we have a case here that the woman is left without a means of support, and I'm supporting the woman and collecting the money from the husband, so the woman, the wife, is benefiting from the husband. Isn't that considered a benefit? Because I'm paying off her loan. So the Rishonim answer, that since when I started supporting the wife, it was obvious that I have the right to collect the money from the husband. The woman, so to speak, not in the picture. It goes directly from the husband to me. And that's why it's even the Rabbanim would agree that it's mutter. But now the question is, my tamar bali chayv in the front, why are these bali chayv allowed to take their money that they're due? Isn't it as if the wife is getting the money from the husband and then they're giving it to me? So it's chilufim of isuri henoh, lamishim the chilufim laf kigdulim dami, and chilufim of something that's prohibited is mutter. Amarava demlechat chiluhu deloy vi avat avat. So the two ways the Rishonim explain. One way to explain is this is the evidig situation. The evid that the wife, that I loaned the money to the wife and now I'm collecting what's due me. So it is a situation of chalufim, but that's only b'di'evit. But Rav Nechama Shaila was, what is the halacha? Should we allow to continue? And I'm an outsider, but we don't know what the halacha is if the subject of the nether is machlif. We don't have a rai from this case. That's one way of explaining the Rosh's way. The Ran uses the concept that we said before. Since the husband is obligated to support his wife, and he can't give her the money directly, so I'm giving her the money. The wife is really not a party here. It's really the husband and me who are the two parties. So this is not a situation of chilufim, and we can't bring a raya to our shayla. Ela tashma, the Gemara brings another raya. Hamakadish ba'orla, if somebody's makadish a woman with something which is orla. Orla, we know, is osu bahano. So the halacha is, enim kadeshes. The halacha is that and the Kiddush is not a Kiddush. And the Rishonim discuss, why is Orla worse than dust? Even if it's Osbano, it's no worse than Afer. You can Mekadosh a woman with Afer. So the simple terrorist is there isn't enough Afer here. There isn't enough ash that you can make a Shava Pruta out of it. Or it could be explained, this woman wants to get married with fruit. She's assuming that she's getting fruit to affect the Kiddush, not ash. But continues the Braisa, saying, Mochron v'kiddush b'demeyem, if I go and I sell the Orla, and I get money for it, so it's chilufe, it's the exchange of something that's also b'hanoah, the halacha is harezim mukadeshes. So we see that the chilufim of something that's also b'hanoah is permitted. So first of all, the Ran says, this is the proof that he's right, that our Gemara is not only referring to something that's also b'neder, our Gemara is also referring to something osbahana, because Orla has something to do with nether. Orla is Isser Hanah. So I saw the Mefarshim ask a very pointed question. If we ever attended a wedding, under the chuppah, the Masada Kedushin asked the chassan, is this ring yours? So let's understand this case. I went and I sold Arla. I had no right to sell Arla. I received funds for it that I should have never received. I received funds for it that I should have never received. So that's like money that's not mine. It's money that's gazela. I had no right to sell Arla to you and get money. So it's like the ring that I don't own. So how could there be a havamina that the kedushin is a valid kedushin? So I saw two turutim to this question. One turut is, when I sold you these Arla products, these Arla fruits, I didn't hide anything. I told you these are Arla products. You gave me the money anyway. Now you recognize that Arla is not supposed to be sold. So the money you gave me, what must it have been? It must have been a situation that you gave me the money as a gift. You realize that I don't deserve any money. I'm not supposed to sell you Arla. It doesn't really have any value. So now this money is truly mine, and I could possibly use it for Kedushin. That's one approach in the Achroinim. Another approach in the Achroinim is just the opposite. When I sold you the Arla products, you weren't aware that they were Arla fruit. If you were aware they're Arla fruit, you would have never bought it. So I sell you that fruit, I take the money. Yes, at that point that I have the money, it's gzela. Because the deal was a mekach tos. You didn't realize you were buying something that you can't eat. But then you find out what a nice guy I am, that I sold you something you're not allowed to eat. But you also recognize that I'm a difficult person that you could ever get the money back from. So what happens? You're miyash. The Gemara Masechta Baba Metzia discusses yiyush. You give up hope of ever getting that money. The Gemara Masechta Baba Metzia says that yiyush, if I have your money and you're miyash of ever seeing that money back, the money becomes mine. So that's what happened here. I sold you all the fruit. When you became aware of what I did to you, you were miyash ever getting back your money, and that's why the money is mine, and that's why the Gemara could consider that perhaps the Kedushin is a Kedushin. So we have a situation of Chilufei Isurei Hanoa. So here we see that the Kedushin is effective. So we see a raya that Chilufim of Isurei Hanoa, a Chilufim of something that's also Beneder, is Mutter. Again, the Gemara says here, Hachanam L'chatchilu Deloi V'Evet Evet. It's only L'chatchila, we don't have a raya that that may be done. And if Paiskim in fact say, the Rishonim already discussed this. The Rishonim say that perhaps only by Kedushin, which when we get into Shaila Sevesh Ish, when we get into Shaila how important it is to be married, to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Purur Revu, we're going to be Mekel with Chilufei Isur Hanoah. What the Halach will be with other situations is not clear. Just to summarize and wrap up some points that we discussed in today's Shir. We discussed the subject of gidulim, something that emanates from something that's also b'hanah. And we suggested, and top of this amit, that everybody agrees that the gidulim, something that directly grows out of something that's also b'hanah or also b'nether, have the same status as the original item. So Rishonim suggests that there may be different situations. They suggest there are two types of seeds. There's sometimes when I plant a seed, and the actual seed remains, and from that seed a new fruit, a new vegetable grows. And sometimes the original seed decomposes. You plant the original seed, that original seed decomposes, and new product emanates. So they want to suggest that when we said on top of the Amid, the Gidulim always retained the status of the original item, that's only Gidulim where the seed doesn't decompose. So something of the original item remains. But if the seed decomposes, so we have nothing left of the original item, there the halacha would be, these Rishonim suggest, that Gidulim would have the same din as Chilufim. Our Gemara, says the Ran, doesn't come to Maskana. What is the din of the Chilufim? Where not that I made the nether for myself, but I made the nether on my item for you. Says the Ran, we're Mekel. The Ran quotes the most Rishonim are Mekel. And the Mefarshim ask, why we Mekel? They want to say it's a Shail of, they want to say it's a Shail of the Rabbanon, and we could be Mekel. So the Mefarshim ask, even if it's a shalav of the Rabbanan, every neder is a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. Because a neder, you could always have annulled. So why should we be makel? Just have the neder annulled. It should be a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. And we know throughout Shas that when we ever have a dovah sheyesh lo matirin, we are not makel. Because as the Gemara says in Masechet Beyah, ach techlena be'isr, techlena be'heter. So I saw two terutzim to this question. One terutz is that maybe as far as nedarim, it's a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. Because a neder could always be annulled. But as we've said a number of times in our shiur today, the subject that we're discussing today is not limited to nedarim. It's all isurei hanor. So by other isurei hanor, by nedarim, I mean, we could call it a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. By other subjects, we can't call it dovah sheyesh lo matirin. But the Gemara treated all isurei hanor and all subject of neder as the same, so we can't differentiate. But then there's another very important teretz between that said by Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses this, the Shagas Aryeh discusses this. How do we define a dovah sheyesh lo matirin? There are two types of dovah sheyesh lo matirin. They say there's a dovah sheyesh lo matirin, which by itself physically is a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. The example would be a muksa. On Shabbos Yontif, this item is muksa. By itself, after Shabbos, after Yontif, it won't be muksa. That's the classical case. A beish should be Yontif. After Yontif, it's no longer muksa. Here, it's not a dovah sheyesh lo matirin because it's inherently mutter, going to become mutter. It could become mutter because of a din. There's a shayla, is the nether a nether? So I could go and be matter the nether. That's not called a dovah sheyesh lo matirin. A dovah sheyesh lo matirin, which is depending on a din, Shagas Aryeh and Kivega want to suggest is not considered a dovah sheyesh lo matirin, and therefore we can't consider this a dovah sheyesh lo matirin.